So I want to give you guys a little bit of context to this episode. It's probably going to be a little bit of a long-winded introduction, so forgive me, but the reason why is that we had so much great feedback at the beginning of the year when we did our episode with Mitch Peribboom and the data project that he was going through and rolling out within Australia. Now, before you stop listening, I want to make sure that you understand is that, yes, we're bringing up again Australian real estate on the podcast, but the reason why is the unique process that they have with open houses over there is that they collect everybody's data that comes through the front door. There's not one person typically that doesn't ever give you any information as they walk through the front door, but the data mining that goes on. They rolled out a program within Queensland that went through and stipulated that 50% of the people that come through an open house will list their home within the next 12 months. And they were working with each individual office, and they still are working with agents to show the slippage of the people that are coming through that they're not identifying as sellers in order to then get an opportunity to list their property. It just goes to show the volume of people when they come through an open house, the volume of business that you're possibly missing out when you're handing out those open houses and you're not doing them yourself, you're not collecting the data at the front door. That is a whole nother episode that I want to definitely follow it up with is, again, that whole collecting data. I know that, or collecting information at the front door. I know I've done it before, but I'm going to do it again just in the spirit of this podcast. We'll do another episode around that. But the one thing I want you to listen to here, guys, is the concept. We're going to be rolling this out within our own North American teams. We would be happy to work with anybody externally as well if they wanted to understand this a little bit further. But we're going to see if this same process is relevant within North America. Their program is called Missing Millions because they've identified people are missing millions and millions and millions of dollars through their open house slippage of not identifying people as sellers and then not communicating with them correctly. And they're actually proving that this many sellers in a neighborhood are selling their property and you had their information and you did nothing with it. We're going to try and do the same thing in North America, a little bit more difficult because the data is not as easy to gather. Stay tuned, so to speak, but I hope you enjoy this wide-ranging episode. I really do enjoy this episode with the team and talking about the philosophy of this because it's something that if we can really identify it within people's core marketplaces, within our own network, I think it will change the game from the effectiveness of people not having to work harder, just working incredibly smarter. Thanks so much. Welcome to Rethink Real Estate. My name is Ben Brady, and this is a real estate podcast aimed to deliver sales strategies, marketing tips, and business insights from industry experts and myself to build a listing-focused business for the future. Let's get into it. Britt, Troy, welcome to Rethink Real Estate.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This is going to be red hot. So, full disclosure to the audience that is listening at the moment, I've got two Aussies with me. So my Aussie slang is going to be a little bit more. As we call it, my ocker will be quite high with these two on the call as well. So I'll make sure that I'll do the translating for any of the North American people that are listening to the podcast, the whole probably four people that are probably listening in at the moment, is that I'll make sure that I do the translating along the way. But it's great to have you both here because I'm really excited to go through the initiative that both of you guys are pushing out within Harcourts Queensland and that you've been part of designing. Just the segue for the people that are listening that have listened to previous episodes, I did an episode at the beginning of the year with Mitch Peribboom, who was the CEO for Harcourts Queensland. Now, that said, is that Mitchell we got a great deal of great feedback around what Mitch was speaking about, which is what we're going to go through in the execution of what you guys are doing today. And for those that don't know the episode and want to go back to it, like I said, Mitch Peribboom, I think it was like a second or third episode for the year so far, but we're basically going through and doing data mining with inside the open houses that people are doing on their properties. So to just give some context to that as we lead into the episode, and then obviously I will let Troy and Britt have a turn here shortly, is that when you're in Australia and you're doing an open house on a property, that typically is the only time that people are coming through that home. I would say, guys, what would you say, Britt and Troy, what's your opinion is that there's not really private showings that happen very often on a property. It's usually just open houses, correct?
Yeah, generally as agents, yeah, we try to avoid the private inspections in Queensland at least. I don't know how it is in the other states, just because best use of time, open homes, most people in the house at one point rather than showing them through individually.
Yeah, social validation, you would call that, like to make sure that people understand the volume of interest, or it catches you with your pants down if no one else is in there. So whatever you like. But I guess that the other thing that I'd say to that is that when you hear the words that Britt or Troy say, when they say inspection, folks, they don't mean somebody physically going out and doing a home inspection on the property. They mean someone going and seeing it. It's a showing. So there you go. There you go. Your first Australianism. Okay. That we'll break through. We're doing well here, folks. We're good. We're two minutes and 30 seconds in and we already got one. That's great.
You're going to have to be like a translator, I think, for this
session. It's going to be good to see if I've still got it. Because I said the other day, I was talking on the phone to actually Mitch, and Mitch said to me something. He said unconditional. I'm like, what's that? Oh, that's right. Yeah, right. I gotcha. Yeah. Getting back to the point here is that when people come through an open house in Australia, they have to, by law, certainly in the state of Queensland anyway, they have to provide their name and contact information. Is that still the case, Britt and Troy?
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So is it name and just phone number, or do they have to give an email address as well? Or because I remember when I was doing open houses back in Australia, I'd go, hi, my name is Ben. What's your name? You write it down, your address, phone number, and then email wasn't really a big thing back then.
Yeah. So I guess it depends on the agent. There's no kind of set rules around what has to be given. I don't know if I should be saying this on a podcast, but I've definitely seen agents not get anything from people at open homes. So it's not like it's a legal requirement that they have to do it. But generally we try to promote that people get first name, last name, mobile number, and email address.
Right. Right. Troy, what do you see from a business owner perspective when you're dealing with the business owners within the network? What are they trying to train their agents in order to get? Because again, it's very, very common practice for people to give name and number. When I say that, like again, I don't think I've ever done an open house where I haven't gotten every single person's name and number. Unless you had somebody incredibly creepy, then you wouldn't let them in the house. But Troy, what are the business owners doing from a training perspective with their agents?
Yeah, so I think from a best practice point of view, it's first name, last name, phone number, and then email address if you can get it. Probably more just that phone number is, I guess, the critical part so we can communicate with them actively. Some business owners are leaning towards asking for probably not the address, but just the suburb. So then you can narrow the search for where they might look. But I guess you probably need to translate this, but with Pricefinder and some of the tools that we've got, we can search what someone owns just by their last name and what they own in Queensland. So we're pretty broad in that aspect.
Well, again, that's probably a good segue into just explaining that, you know, the data and the ability to search what people own in Australia is quite easy. You know, so we put your first name, last name in, and you could probably do a property search around the properties that you own within Pricefinder itself. Or RP data is the other resource, I'm assuming. Yeah, correct?
Yep.
But I guess that in the US, the one thing that we would look towards, folks, for those looking to translate this, is that we would look towards your title officer or title company that would actually help us in the search of that. We're going through and exploring that at the moment. What are the best ways and avenues? So anybody's got any bright ideas, please drop some comments in the YouTube or send us an email and let us know if you've got any other bright ideas as we try and figure it out. But that said, getting back to the real purpose of this, in the discovery of all of this, your job, well, Troy, you're the business development manager for or BDM for Harcourts in Queensland. So you're dealing with agents, business owners in the greater Harcourts network. Yep. Britt, your primary role is that just across Queensland or is it across Australia in order for this initiative being the sort of data mining that we're going through?
Across Queensland as well.
Okay, great. So in essence, if I'm giving people a bit of an understanding of what we're diving into now, you're taking the names and numbers of all of those people that have come through an agent's open house. You're putting it into you're then going in and creating a spreadsheet. And then what is happening with that? Can you please walk us through what happens at that point? An agent stands at an open house, they get everybody's names and numbers through. And if they're part of your program, what happens from there?
Cool. So originally we were using it to just work out what was happening in a business. Across Queensland, there's 54, 55 Harcourts offices. So without being in the marketplaces, we were using the data project to be able to look at a business and assess what they were doing really well and what things we could help them improve on. So we were using the data and their databases with the collection. So like their databases have been built off the back of open homes, taking people's names and numbers like we just spoke about. We were looking at that data and we were assessing, okay, well, how many of these people have they actually, how many people do they have firstly? How many have they identified as owning property? And then how are they communicating with those people that they've done the hard work, searched them on Pricefinder or RP Data and attached them to a property? And what are they actually doing with that information? Are they calling them every quarter and trying to have a conversation? Are they asking the right questions on the phone, or are they missing opportunities to list property based on what they're actually doing with that information?
So can I ask, just we're going to go back and we're going to lead through a couple of questions here, and then Troy, I'm going to throw over to you because you're probably the more hands-on in the sense of that the ongoing element within the business of with the business owners and obviously the agents and helping them understand this a little bit further from a skill set perspective. But Britt, like let's say that we go down the path of your data. Let's say I've got 10 names and numbers that I've gotten at that open house. Mm-hmm. That segues into your program, so to speak, that data program that you're responsible for. Yeah. So at that point, the next part of this is that then the agent would typically follow up with that person. If they're a phenomenal agent, they'd probably do it the afternoon of the open house or the Sunday after the open house on Saturday, or if they're just the general agent, probably the Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah.
Now, after they've followed up, okay, and you've probably got an opinion on that anyway, we'll get back to that. however, let's go as far as to say that then they've gone through and ticked them all off as followed up. Their primary role in that follow-up is to identify them as a possible seller or possible buyer, or what are they reporting back to you at that point?
Yeah. So really the whole point of making those phone calls, we're very lucky, like you said, in Queensland, where we can actually search just using someone's last name and then their first name or even initial of their first name, and we can search what they own. We generally promote that agents do that before they make their phone calls. And then so when they're calling those people back in the afternoon on a Saturday, they're actually like fishing for them to give them the information that they already know. The whole idea is that you know where you want that conversation to get to. It's that I own this house in Smith Street and I'm wanting to upsize, and yes, I do need to sell that house to buy, but you want to create the conversation and make that flow so that you're building rapport with those people. I shouldn't say this on a podcast, we don't really care if they like the house that they came through. What we really care about is what can we help them with in terms of selling property, if any. Are they owners, and how can we build that rapport quickly with them so that we're their choice of agent when it comes to the crunch?
It kind of sounds like it, in the US, what we're going to obviously have to try and do is that we're going to have to try and get them to verbalize that they own real estate somewhere. Yeah. Like that would be the first primary step. Whereas in Australia, you kind of already know that, and you're trying to lead them into the conversation of, yeah, hey, why are you here? Are you looking to buy this thing, or are you looking because you're looking to sell in the near future?
Exactly.
And in essence, you know, like, I think that Troy, from a skill set perspective, how are business owners training or how are you as corporate helping agents, you know, train to ask the questions what are you seeing as the biggest holdback? Why are people not calling them back? You know, you're probably seeing Brittany and also Troy, you're probably seeing people not even make the phone calls.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, so what we typically do with the business owners and with the agents, and Britt drives this a lot as well, is we've got a stock board that we run through with them effectively of properties that they've missed in the last week, and then trying to identify what that reason is for why they've missed it. And typically that'll come down to either a process within the business or a skill set with the agent. So we've probably got the benefit that, I guess, the first two markers, have we ID'd that they own the property, and have they made contact with them in the last 90 days? So are we communicating with them regularly? For us, because we've got the ability to search if they're a homeowner, that just comes down to system. If we haven't identified those or we haven't had the communication, then there's just a system breakdown. So what do we need to do within the business or within the agent's business to change that system so that's missed? Mm. And then the other two reasons why they wouldn't have missed, well, they've missed it, is that they haven't ID'd them as a seller, or they've lost it at the listing presentation, which just comes down to skill set. So then if that's where we're falling short, how do we work with the agents around that particular skill set to make sure that they get more opportunity?
I think that, can I ask a question to you then, Troy? How does an agent take the feedback? How does the agent take, because I remember my sales meetings in Australia, they were brutal. Absolutely brutal. What have you got coming up? And then you'd follow it up in the next week and you'd say, no, I missed that listing. You know, they were pretty brutal in the sense of that, like, why'd you miss it? Oh, okay, all these different reasons. How do people handle the feedback around? Because what you're essentially doing is going, hey, guys, these are the number of listings that you missed last week where you actually had the person's name and phone number, but you either didn't communicate with them or didn't identify them as a seller. You guys have missed out on all of this business. How does a business owner and how does an agent and how do the people take that? Because there's an element of defensiveness that I'm assuming that there would be, first of all. And I want to ask that question, Troy, to you first, and then Britt, I'd love to hear your answer.
I think it's how we approach it with them as well. So naturally it's coming from approach of, hey, we're not looking to blame anyone for the opportunity that's been missed. It's more using this as a training element.
Passive aggressive as shit. I love it. That is amazing. Oh, guys, it's not really your fault. We're not going to, don't worry about it. But by the way, you missed out on $1 million.
They don't take it too well. But then I think what I see, and Britt, hopefully you're seeing the same as well, is that the ones that want to know and want to improve will embrace it, and the ones that want to fool themselves into thinking that they're doing well and they're growing even though they're not growing, then they're the ones that basically they'll just cancel the appointments and you'll never see them again. But the ones that are engaged and are serious about growth, they'll engage with the program.
What about you, Britt? What do you find when you're giving some feedback where you're basically identifying that? Because it's pretty interesting. It's kind of like, hey, you're pretty shit at your job. Here you go.
Yeah, I think from a business owner point of view, it's understanding the value of the database initially, because for them, it's not really knowing what they've got there, but it's money, like it's listing opportunities that they don't have to prospect. Well, they do have to prospect, sorry, but it's in their database. They've got their names, they've got their phone numbers, and this is how much your database can actually generate in terms of dollar value for you and for your agents. So that's the first piece, is kind of understanding it's actually a really positive thing, because you don't need to focus on growing your database anymore. You don't need to go out and door knock and get phone numbers and things like that, because you've actually got a database that has the capacity to generate X amount of money. So let's focus on actually using that. So it's getting them on board with that firstly. And then, like Troy said, it's about the perspective. So rather than it being a finger-pointing thing, because a lot of offices, I don't think, have the capacity to do this project. They just aren't at a level where they can understand that stuff. So yep. It's more around how can we get better and refine the skills that we already have. We already know that we can list and sell real estate. We can call people. We've got that kind of skill set there. It's what can we do to be better at our craft, which is listing and selling property.
So I want to take a segue into give you guys giving us an example of some of the best businesses that you operate with and their process and their structure in order to make sure that there's no slippage. I think that I'd love to hear that. And Britt, while you've got the floor, I'd love you to start, and then Troy, I'd love you to give an example. However, that said, is that folks, if you're hearing in the background all the birds and everything along those lines, welcome to Australia. Okay, Brittany, I'm assuming that's you, because Troy. No, it's good. It's great. I'm just going to explain to people. We've got lorikeets. I'm gonna throw them a couple out there. We've got lorikeets, I've heard. We've got a crow in the background, which is just, that's Queensland for you, bring it. And then I've heard a couple of magpies as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
That's how embarrassing. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No. Just so that people know where you are, you're not actually in Hawaii with the palm trees in the background, okay? We're in Brisbane, Queensland. But let's go through just some good examples of some practices within offices. Now, I just want to just make sure that I segue into this correctly, though, for the people that are listening in North America. When we say business owners, we mean the broker of that individual office that is responsible for helping and training. I want people to understand as well the commission splits in Australia, how they are much, much higher in the office's favor. So therefore, that business owner is making a great deal more money than what you would be as a broker within your business. Okay, so therefore, they're very, very, very hands-on in helping agents actually grow and get better in their business, because they reap the benefits in a far greater way. That's one of the aspects that we definitely try to do when it comes to Harcourts in North America, is to make sure that there is a higher level of support within a traditional brokerage structure. However, The thing that I will say is that most of these brokers or business owners, they are not selling brokers or selling principals. They are not selling real estate at the same time. A lot of them, some of them are, but in the case of where you're looking at this and you might be an independent brokerage or you might be a brokerage where you're the broker and you're selling and you're the best agent at the same time, okay, is that keep in mind is that Australia is a different structure. We're trying to draw as many parallels as we can. And I think that there's some real gold in what Britt and Troy are rolling out in Queensland. So try and draw as many parallels as you possibly can. But Britt, over to you where you're seeing this used or you're seeing the best process and systems. How do you see that work?
Yeah, cool. So I don't know if it's the same in North America, but in Queensland, most offices, just as some context for their database, there's two ways that they kind of run it. It's either a closed database or an open database. What closed means is that each agent within the business has their own set of clients and only they can see those clients in the system and only they can call those clients. So
99.999% of businesses in North America would operate that way.
Right. And most offices do operate that way as well in Queensland. The other way that they can operate is where it's open. So everyone can see everybody's contacts and then there's rules within the office around how frequently those people can be contacted, who can contact them. Basically, it's trying to avoid data being neglected or contacts being neglected and allow newer agents that might not necessarily have that contact database build one from what offices call orphan data, so people that haven't been communicated with by the person that bought that data into the business.
So, just so you know, there's many agents that are listening to this in North America that are hyperventilating at the thought of that somebody else could see what their client is or even see into their database. But I think that it's always great to just listen to different things. So Britt, can I ask just the rules around that orphan data? Like, so for example, is that they do an open house, they put it into the open house app, but it then gets pooled into the Vault, which is like Vault RE, which is the system or CRM that you guys use over there. Yeah. And then that becomes the ownership of the office, or how does that work if it's a pooled data perspective?
Yeah, it's ownership of the office, but then it does come down to the agent actually doing the work to also retain that data. So as an example, if they were calling that client that they've bought into the office every 90 days, or at least attempting to, then it remains the property of that agent. Once they stop communicating, so say, for example, they haven't spoken to someone for 6 months, then somebody else in the office would have every ability to then contact that person and reach out, say, how are you going? What's been happening with your property journey? And then take over that client as theirs, as opposed to the person that originally met that client. So the best way
I've cut you off from a process perspective. So yeah, go for it.
the best way that I've actually seen it work, we've had offices where they have been very for the closed database, but actually creating a bit of a hybrid. So there is a closed database for the agent; only the agent can see their contacts. But in Queensland, and I don't know again if it's the same way in North America, agents kind of have their set areas that they prospect, so suburbs that they focus on. And very regularly they'll meet people from outside of those suburbs. And so what we see within those closed databases is a lot of very valuable information that might not be valuable to the agent that originally met that person, but to someone else in the team. So it kind of creates that culture of being able to share that information where, okay, well, these are the people that matter to me as an agent because they're in my core area that I prospect and am focusing on growing my business in. But here's like a heap of other people that I know, you know, Tim in the office would be really interested in contacting because they're in his area. So it's kind of trying to, and then opening those contacts up for other people if they're interested, calling them because it's got no value to the agent that originally bought them in. Have I explained that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You've done a great job with that. Absolutely. Yeah. But as we lead back into the best process, so like we do the open house, it goes into the app, then the database is there. No, it's good. No, it's really great stuff. It's good information, but just making sure that we don't lead too far down a rabbit hole. I love a good rabbit hole, trust me.
Oh, my brain.
But yeah. but I guess that give me a model of the best practices within a company that you see. It's a closed database, because that's probably the example that's going to resonate the most with our audience. Is that then what happens with it?
So a client comes through an open home. Then the agent gets back to the office, searches their name in Price Finder, because of course we've gotten their first name, last name, mobile number, and email address, finds out that they own a property, attaches them to the property in the system, calls them back on the Saturday afternoon to see what they thought of the property, try and build some rapport, kind of create that conversation around what are you looking to do? Do you have property? Oh, you do. What a surprise. And kind of build that relationship. And then from there, depending on where they are in their selling journey, if they're very like cold, if they're not looking to sell for kind of 12 months or more, would communicate with them over the phone every 90 days, so every quarter, would text them every time something in their kind of immediate area came up for sale or was sold, would email them every month with updated listings. So there's layers to the way that they communicate with that person. And then as they get closer to thinking of selling, that phone call would kind of come more regularly than every quarter, just to kind of check in, make sure they're still on track. And then what the agent would do with the database that they had of homeowners would be to regularly kind of clean through that, at least in their core suburb that they're focusing on, look at the listings that have come onto the market and see, were they in my database? If they were, did I know that they were selling? And if I did, why did I lose it? Was it that I got to the listing presentation and it came down to fees or marketing or something like that? Or did I actually not even ask the question on the phone? So I had no idea that they were selling their property.
That's a really comprehensive layout of things. Troy, I'd like to hear from your perspective, maybe an office or an individual agent that is doing this incredibly well that you're seeing in the network, that you've been part of their journey and actually getting really going from being really bad at this to now really good at it. Do you have a specific example of an office or an agent that you could share with us from a process perspective that you've seen really that from the perspective of identifying opportunity, they've done a really good job of that to then chase it?
Yeah, well, and we're starting to see, and we're probably only now getting benefits in a few of the offices that are doing it on a grander scale, but there's a couple of agents, and it tends to be the younger agents at the moment that are embracing it, that you've seen them go from effectively no market share or from a place of zero to, I guess, contending with market leadership in their markets as well. Just because they're seeing the data as not this big pool of mess that we pat ourselves on the back because we've got 10,000 pieces of data that makes us feel good, but we've got 1,000 people or 500 people that they've actually built a meaningful relationship with where they've got relevance in that marketplace. And effectively, they're little killers in the market that they're just flying past these other people that have no relationships and just expect the business to come back to them.
It's so funny, Troy, that you say that. I had a meeting today with one of our better agents, and she was saying to me that she's got a very large database at the moment. I'm like, first of all, let's classify large database. Could you go through and identify the people that actually own property in Southern California that ultimately know who you are and what you do?
Yep.
Like if I was to call and say, hey, do you know Troy from Harcourts? Oh yeah, no, I know Troy. He's in real estate. Yeah, okay, right. Like they can identify one who you are and what you do. And realistically is that, you know, she turned around and goes, oh, that's probably 20% of my database. It's like, oh dear. You know, like it's amazing to see that when people, they find security in the numbers versus security in the quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And there was that they're actually external to the network from a previous role that I was in, but there was an agent that did it so religiously in their market. One of the things they did, they'd update on a recent sale anytime that it happened. And their market became so used to them calling to tell them about a sale that if they ever missed it or they were late calling the market around it, they actually used to get calls saying, hey, how come you haven't called me about this sale?
Do you know what? Australians are such assholes. They would call the agent and go, oh, you missed one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that leads me now to a couple of questions that I've got for you guys, just from a numbers perspective, as we draw to the sort of end of this, is that First things first, Britt, what would you say? And Troy, I'm going to ask you the same question to see whether or not there's any light that you can shed on this as well. What would you say, just from an average perspective, out of every 10 people that come to an open house? Now, I know that there's so many things that this depends on. Depends on area, depends on price point, depends on everything. But I'm going to ask you to use some real dirty math, okay? And I want you to have a real guess at this. Out of 10, every 10 people that come through an open house, from an average perspective, how many of those people actually list their property within 30, 60, 90 days? I'd love to hear just a bit of a guesstimate on that.
Yeah, it's probably about 50-50, I think.
Holy shit.
Yeah. At the moment, I think it used to be different. And again, it does depend on the market. There are some markets where there's a lot more first home buyers that come through the open homes. But a lot of the marketplaces at the moment, I would say 50% of the people that come through are actually homeowners. And even if they aren't, what we're seeing because of the interest rates and things like that in Queensland is that they will buy and then sell their property within 12 to 18 months. So even if they don't own a property when they come through the open home, they buy something and they sell it within a 12, 18 month period.
It's amazing when, you know, you used to go back on do the reverse analysis on an individual farm area and you'd try and figure out what the average time between somebody, you know, buying a property and selling it. It's that, you know, it's that magic rule of 7 years. It's like, that is such bullshit now.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm gonna ask you the same question, but Britt, I'm gonna come back to you on this. I wouldn't mind getting an opinion from you, Troy. Like, do you believe it's 50-50 as well? But I'd love to know what you think the statistic is between 30. Like, how many of those 10 people sell their home in 30 days? How many of those 10 people do 60, and how many of those 10 people do 90? Like, what's the percentage breakdown within those time periods?
Yeah, the numbers that I normally work off for a 12-month period is that effectively one in three will sell within 12 months when they're coming through if they're homeowners. So the stats we normally see is that if they come to us, which the only place that happens is open homes, it's one in three. Whereas if we cold call someone and book an appraisal, it goes to one in 10. So like your odds drastically reduce. But I'd probably say, well, if we said five or 10 were selling in the next 12 months, I'd say probably one in the next 30 days, two after that in the next 90 days, and then three in the next 12 months.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty five. Good. Yeah, no, that's really good. Now, I'm just going to just quickly update a few people on a few of the Australianisms there. Folks, an appraisal actually means like a property opinion, an agent opinion. Stock, you said stock before, that means inventory. And then what was the other one you just said? Open home is open house.
We got pretty deep before you needed to do another update.
Oh, no, yeah. You know, there's a couple, you know, people get a little bit off put. Like Mitch certainly gets off put when he's on the podcast and I correct him. He's like, hang on a second. Like, I don't, you know, normally get corrected here. Like, please. So Britt, do you tend to agree with what Troy said on the 30, 60, 90 day perspective? I'd love to create an argument between the two of you. It'd be amazing, but that's fine.
No arguments this time. I'd say that's pretty true. I think most people think that once clients start coming through open homes, they've already got their agent and they're listing in the next 7 days. From what we see, I agree with Troy that that's less likely to be the case. Out of the homeowners that come through, maybe one of them have actually found their agent and are listing in the next 30 days. Most of them are still kind of further out where they haven't got an idea of who they're going to use to sell their property.
Let's get a bit weird here, okay? Weird's probably the wrong word. Let's start theorizing a tiny bit, okay, around just some theory, right? Let's just shoot through this because I think the three of us understand real estate relatively well. Is that I think that like the thing that I'd love to know is that let's say there's 10 homes that list within a neighborhood, okay? So that's another one actually you said as well, suburb. It really doesn't, we don't really say suburb in North America. It's more neighborhood or city. But let's say that 10 homes list in a city, okay, or a neighborhood. Out of those 10 sellers, 10 different sellers, how many of those people do you think would have actually went and visited an open house before they chose to sell their property?
Oh.
Any one of you?
I don't think many. I think, call it 30%.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think unless you really I guess, wanting, because you, well, in Australia anyway, normally if you don't have a relationship, you have multiple people through your home, which I don't know why people would want to spend that much time with real estate agents, but hey.
You mean in the listing presentation that they'll have multiple people that they're competing against? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where you, I guess, that's where you interview. But I think the ones that go through open homes, it's normally one that, so I can walk around the corner and have a little look through that just to get a bit of a feel what's happening in the market, as opposed to perhaps interviewing an agent.
Britt, same question to you. 10 listings in a neighbourhood. How many of those people do you think visit an open home?
I would agree, 30% or less. I think it's only the really kind of the sellers that want to be a bit hands-on, that want to do that research, that actually come through. I don't think many of them do. And a lot of what I speak to in offices is around, like, there's so many different people that interpret information and absorb it differently. The whole idea of having those different layers in what we do, in the calls, the emails, the text messages, the open homes, the signboards, is so that we can kind of, on whatever forum or platform they absorb information, we're first point or first thought in their mind when they do flick from I'm just researching to I'm ready to sell. It's like, can I go back to that text message from that random agent that I've never actually replied to before? Or what was that flyer in my letterbox? Or there's that signboard or bus stop around the corner. It's kind of like, how do they do it the easiest way?
It's so funny if you think about this, 50% of the audience that come through your open house are possible sellers within the next 30, 60, 90, 12 months. But then those 50% that come through your open house only represent possibly 30% of the marketplace. And again, none of that number is, that's Troy, Britt and I, who've got a decent knowledge of real estate, all thinking about a number. Keep in mind that I didn't say that number, so if it's incorrect, I never came up with that as those two. However, is that it's funny from a perception perspective, you guys would have your finger very, very much on the pulse. And that's why, you know, it's funny that, like, people think, oh, well, open house might be the only way that we can prospect, or it's the easiest way to prospect. Well, if you do that, you're only ever going to have maybe maximum 30% market share within that area. Like, if you thought about that for a second, like, again, 30% market share would be absolutely unequivocally amazing, okay? But that said, is that you would have to dominate 100% of the people that you ever met coming through that open house and get 100% of that business. Again, it's just, that is completely me going down a rabbit hole. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about different things. But if we were to go back and we were to sort of think about the way that we're going to do this within North America, I'd love to get a little bit of feedback around what you guys wished you did better when you first started this project. Now, the reason I say that is that we're coming into this, we're not calling it Missing Millions. We're not stealing your name. We're kind of adjusting it. We're calling it, Are We Missing Millions? Now, the reason I say that is because in Australia, yes, 50% of the people that come through your open houses are going to sell their home in the next 12 months. But in North America, maybe that's not the case. Now, that depends on price point and all of that type of stuff, but we don't know yet. And that's what we really want to do before we start doubling down on telling people that this is the way and the future of what you need to do for business and blah, 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 blah. Don't get me wrong. If it's collecting data that we need to do, then absolutely. The first step that we need to do in North America is actually start taking people's names and numbers down at the front door, which we've spoken about many times on this podcast. But as we lead into it, we're calling it Are We Missing Millions? We're on a bit of an exploratory mission to figure out, you know, one, can we do this effectively enough for it to be useful? And two, is the data going to be useful? So guys, what if you could turn back the clock and you were going to start this all again, how would you do it? Or what would you do differently? What would you do differently?
I can talk. So both Troy and I were agents before we were in our roles with Harcourts Queensland, and 100%, if I was an agent again, if I had my time over and I knew what I know now, I feel like all of Missing Millions is like my regret story, but of things that I would do better as an agent. But I think that the key thing is really understanding, it's like a build your own adventure. So what data do I have? And then actually having those people attached to the properties in their CRM, and what does that represent in terms of the entire sale side of things, the percentage of people that sell in that marketplace? So if I sell in suburb, let's say Ascot, and I know that the turnover in that suburb is 7%, what does that look like in terms of the number of houses, and then what does my database have the capacity to generate? If that doesn't match my goal as an agent, then I need to grow my database. That's step one. If it does, then I need to get better at what I do with that data. So that's the other way that it can go. So it kind of veers off from there. And I think just understanding that from the start and maybe being better at that, the beginning bit, then focusing on dialogue or focusing on any of that, because you can build
skill sets way easier at that point. Set becomes so much easier to learn at that point. It's about having the people to talk to. I often say you could be the best agent in the world, but if you've got no one to talk to, you're useless.
It's just building that bit better would be the thing I did different.
Troy, what about you, mate? If you were going to roll this back out to the network, what would you do different with it?
I probably think the agent understanding of it, like having them before, like, cause you get the shock value. Like when we rolled it out, the first time that Brick presented it, the loss over a 12-month period was over 15 million in GCI. So you get the shock value of it, but then the agents don't really understand why we're doing it. So probably getting them.
Do they not understand, or they do not believe it? They don't believe they're missing that much.
Well, I think it's both. I think they don't believe it cause they don't understand it.
Fair.
So if you could go through the process of probably starting with, hey, this is what it's all about and this is why we're going through it, this is what it could mean for your business, and by the way, this is what you missed, then you get the shock value, but then they're probably also going to believe that, yeah, maybe that did come out of my business if I'm wanting to look myself in the mirror and really say I did or I didn't do that work.
Yep. Okay. That's good. Anything else to add, you two, before we conclude Rethink Real Estate? Do you know what? Actually, I am going to ask you two this, because I always ask guests this. Give me your best life hack. That's what I often ask the guests on the podcast. I go, give us a life hack. Okay. As you think about it, I'm going to monologue here for a second, just so that you both have a bit of time to think about it. Like, when guests come onto the podcast, I always round it out with, hey, favorite podcast, favorite book. What's a life hack that you can share with the people that are listening? I'm going to ask you both that. Favorite podcast, favorite book, and life hack. And if you want to throw something in there and you don't have anything to give, give us your favorite Netflix series or something like that, because I hate searching for those things. Give us something. All right. So Troy, we're starting with you.
Thank you.
Is that favorite podcast?
Favorite podcast at the moment is probably Huberman Lab. My only problem with it is they go too long. But that's probably where I'm playing at the moment for a podcast.
Good. There is actually not a podcast, but it's actually a YouTube channel that cuts them all the way down. If you wanted to listen to that instead, book. Give me a book.
Book. I'm not a good reader. I find it hard to have my attention span held with books. So I'm actually normally reading about 7 books at a time, and then whatever catches my flavor. When I pull up the app to read a book, that's what I'm reading.
Hang on. Woo. What's catching my flavor? Weird. Anyway, keep going.
So, the book that's got my attention at the moment is The Mindset Athlete. So he's basically the mindset coach he was with the Chicago Bulls when Jordan was around. So he was Michael Jordan's mindset coach. He's worked with Kobe and a lot of other elite athletes. So that's, I've probably got another couple of weeks out of that before I move on to getting back into another book I've already started.
Life hack.
Trying to think of a life hack that might actually give someone value. Probably don't have many.
It might be 3 beers instead of 4 at the pub. Who knows? Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that is a good life hack. Maybe have the 4th. Good things normally happen after that, don't they?
Oh, geez.
life hack that I stole from someone else that I try and do fairly regularly is more just about for when I get home. I never walk in the door on the phone. So it's always, you can have a conversation or at least welcome who's on the other side of the door when you walk home. So I try to never walk in the door on the phone.
You're married, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
That's pretty smart, I guess. There you go.
It's worked so far.
Yeah, again, if he's like, never walk in the door on the phone. Are you single? Yep, no one's at home. All right, Britt, give us the lay of the land. Now, you're probably going to have some type of life hack considering that you're a new mum as well, but let's go with podcast first.
Yep. Not work related at all, but Hello Sport. It's very Australian.
Oh, give me, what is it?
It's just Dribble. It's called Hello Sport. It's two guys and they just talk about absolutely anything, a lot of sport, but it's just, they just give each other shit, basically. It's funny.
Oh, that's great. I love that. It's like my guilty pleasure, like, because I'm marathon training at the moment and like I always feel like I have to have a podcast going or I have to be relatively serious about things and learning and whatever it is when I don't retain any of the information anyway. But I love Smartless. Like I'm a big, like it's like, that's like my Dribble. They don't go through anything of substance on it. It is just absolute Dribble and it's kind of entertaining. But give us your book.
I'm reading a book at the moment called The Midnight Library. Again, not work related at all, no mindset coaches or anything like that, but it's about the different lives that you could have if you had made different choices and the infinite ways that life could be different. So it's pretty cool.
That's kind of a little mindset. That's mindset.
Yeah.
That's mindset. I think that's mindset. That's absolutely mindset. I think that there's an element of that that obviously gets you thinking pretty laterally at that point.
Yeah. And it's interesting. The character in the book, I think ultimately the way it will go is that the life that she is in is the best version of her life. And so all the regrets that she had, really she shouldn't have had them. Like when she sees the ways that those different lives went. Yeah, it's interesting.
Ah, cool. That's cool perspective. And then life hack.
Life hack. I actually was racking my brain before when Troy was talking. I was like, I don't know what life hack I have. No idea. What are some of the best ones that you've had?
I've had all types of stuff. Like it's like, but it mainly bases around, I think it's decision making that sort of a lot of them base themselves around. Like I've had people, I actually had one lady who's actually going to be, I think she's on before you guys or after. Her name's Cynthia Cummings. She's an agent in the Bay Area. It's actually the funniest one. She's like, life hack. She pulls up this thing and I'm like, what is it? And she's like, it's an electric can opener. I'm like, huh? And she proceeds to go, like, I'm expecting something philosophical. She's a very philosophical lady. And she thinks that the greatest life hack that she's ever experienced is a electric can opener. Hilarious. Anyway. Thank you both. Yeah, that's right. Thank you both so much for joining us on Rethink Real Estate. I really enjoy the project. Congratulations to all the success that you're having with it, because if anybody undervalues that in Australia and you're listening, you absolutely should get on it. But we're going to be doing something here very shortly in North America where we can really give an understanding of whether or not it's the same level of relevance to us as what it is to you guys. But again, thank you both for joining me.
Excited to see it. Thanks so much.
So about 75% of our audience hasn't liked, followed, or subscribed to our podcast. It would mean the world to us, and it would help this podcast more than you know to expand our reach if you were to like, follow, or subscribe on any of the platforms that you're watching or listening on. Thanks again.